One, two, three. This is Dr. Alex Avila with Love University, and we're back. I'm an author, psychologist, and speaker. And every week we talk about how to love ourselves, others, and higher nature, how to improve our love, our relationships, our finances, our career, our health. And we've been having some great guests on the show. And today we have a lovely guest, a good friend of mine, actually, Dr. Paulette Sherman, who is a licensed psychologist, relationship therapist for over 20 years of experience. She's authored, amazingly, over 23, I think almost 25 books. She's won 14 book awards. And she's also been an expert on CBS, Reader's Digest, Psychology Today, and Oprah Magazine. Her latest book is called Facebook Dating, From First Date to Soulmate. We want to really get into that. Welcome, Paulette, to the show.
Thank you so much. You know I love being here, talking to you.
Yeah, I really love your energy. You know, I think we discovered last time we're both meaning seeker personalities. We're both like into the spiritual psychology and finding meaning in life. Mm-hmm. And you also talk about, I think some of your books and even the news book, you talk about dating from the inside out. You have a very interesting term called mindfulness dating. So tell us a little bit of, first of all, the word mindfulness we hear about, we think of like meditation or stuff like that. So what is mindfulness and how does it apply to dating?
Well, I think mindfulness can apply to everything. And to me, it kind of is just a simple process to help you center and feel and examine your thoughts and your feelings and make more informed, conscious, healthy choices. Yes. So that you're not just doing things unconsciously and impulsively. And that was one of the things that in this context that really drew me to the Facebook dating idea anyway, because their tagline was that it was going to be about mindful, meaningful relationships.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. So the word mindfulness, so are we talking about sitting there and breathing in and out and being aware of things? Give me an example of mindfulness.
Sure. I mean, it doesn't have to be the breathing in and out. I do include mindfulness exercises throughout the books, and I think it is really helpful, at least for myself and my clients, to breathe deeply because you get out of your fight and flight nervous system, which is the impulsive one where you feel like there's a tiger in the room and it's based on fear. Yes. And when you breathe deeply, you go into your relaxed nervous system where you kind of get more in touch with your wiser self. Yes. And you get more grounded and you kind of put that, what I like to say, is an inner pause so that you can kind of reflect before you act. And that's what being mindful is. It's not, again, being impulsive, going on automatic old patterns or your fears. It's actually coming back to a place of centeredness and love and then making a conscious choice that will serve you.
I like that inner pause. I like that term, is slowing down a little bit, because we live in such a fast society. You know, everyone's rushing around, especially in big cities and traffic and on the cell phones and everything. So taking that little pause. And you mentioned that research shows that people with mindfulness have more happiness, self-esteem, more optimistic. You even say that women are more attracted to men high in mindfulness, that they're seen as being more curious, open, and not just mental.
So, I'm laughing because I'm even thinking married people too. Like, who doesn't want a spouse or even in a long-term relationship, a partner who's mindful, right?
Exactly.
Who's present.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. What happens if you have, I mean, I call them the mini seeker kind of men and women who love philosophy, spirituality and all that. But what if you get a gentleman or women that are not really into that? They're saying, well, I'm a very practical person. I'm a security seeker. I'm an excitement seeker. I just want to have fun and relationships. So what do you say to those folks in terms of mindfulness?
Well, first of all, you can be mindful that you're picking people like you, right? I mean, you would know about that because you pair people off based on their characteristics and how they go together or don't go together, right? Yeah. So if you're not mindful, and let's say that you had a mother that was, I don't know, a meaning seeker or something like that, and so unconsciously that's what you're attracted to, and you keep picking that person again and again, and then they don't go with you, right? Or you want, or like I've had clients that say, I really don't want kids, and I feel guilty because my family wants me to have kids and wants me to get married, but really I want to sleep till 10 and see the person twice a week and have someone who travels. So they have to get clear what they do want, not just, or they'll be caught in a conflict about what they don't want and repeat the same thing over and over again, right? So I guess my longer term answer to that is, if you become mindful of who you really are and accepting of that from a place of love and not fear, then you can attract that back.
Because the word awareness comes to mind. I think we use the word awareness or being consciously knowledgeable about what's going on in terms of your dating choices, I guess relationship choices. But why, Paulette, wouldn't people be aware? Is there something that makes us hypnotized, or do we fall asleep in life psychologically in our daily life and in terms of relationships? What's going on with that?
I do think that. I don't know what you think, but I find that people almost go hypnotic. We are entrained at a certain age to do certain patterns based on what we've seen our family do and based on what we've done over and over again. And so we don't even realize we're doing it. And that's what habits are. They become unconscious. And basically, a lot of people say habits are the building blocks for our entire lives. And so we have love habits as well, right? In terms of our types and what we do. Yes. And our defensive style. And we do them over and over again. And we're not awake to that. And that was what my first book was largely about was kind of seeing what doesn't work, getting that out of the way, becoming conscious of what you do want, and then actually putting that into action. So that was a long time ago. That was my first book. But I feel like I'm also trying to do that in my own way in this book, because one of the things that drew me theoretically, as I said, to Facebook dating, as opposed to the other apps, is it's not just swiping. It's not hooking up. It's about long-term meaningful relationships. And they built it from the ground up with mindfulness, in the sense that what is it that wasn't working for people? They did a survey. What is it people need? And then how can people date consciously across the different barriers?
I definitely want to get into Facebook dating. Now, the first part of your book does talk about mindfulness, and also throughout the book. And I'm really interested in that, because you talk about the idea of making dating painless without judgment or attachment. And you even mentioned the Eastern philosophy approach of that. So the idea of not being attached to things, for example, someone doesn't return your text or, you know, on a dating app or whatever it is, you don't feel bad about it. So how do we do that? Because human beings, we are kind of somehow consciously or unconsciously geared to attaching to things. You know, we want people to like us and appreciate us. So what's your advice to people like that, singles that have attachment?
Well, I first want to acknowledge that most humans do have trouble with this, and that's okay. So don't like beat yourself up or judge yourself if you are having some attachments or feeling rejected. I think that's just normal. And part of mindfulness is not to judge yourself, and also to try not to judge the other person and not to attach to an outcome, because you really can't control an outcome. The only thing that you can control at all, I guess, is your own self, your emotional regulation, right? And whether you're coming from love or fear, which is something I like that you always talk about.
Yes.
So I feel like, you know, the one thing that you can do is, instead of attaching to an outcome, is really become cognizant of the process and come back into the present, come back into your best self, come back to a place of love, and then everything can be an extension of that. And obviously there's different exercises for each dating issue that I go into. There are many of them in the book. But in general, I think if you have that context and you ask yourself, am I in a state of love or am I in a state of fear? Am I in a state of judgment or non-judgment? Then you can see if you're judging yourself because you're rejecting yourself in the process, if you're jealous because somebody's dating someone else and you're making yourself less than, right? And then you can recognize that as just a thought or a story. And I talk about that, and you can kind of breathe into it and let it go and come back to, where is this coming from? What story am I making up? Does that really make sense? How can I come back to loving myself and doing what will help me now? And then that gives you a more of a sense of mastery and empowerment and control, even though you know, the other person may be annoying you or not doing what you want, which happens all the time, right?
Yes.
In relationships, but also in dating, and especially online.
That makes sense. And the thing about, you mentioned emotional regulation, and we talk about extend loving energy without expectation at Love University. The main idea is to be the best or kindest or loving person you can be internally, and then that extends outwardly. And then, you know, people may or may not respond, and many times they will respond well. But you don't have the expectation, which is the disappointment, the disillusionment. And that's an important thing. And one thing that's interesting here that you talk about, and I almost interpret this as meditating after your date, or being mindful, if you say. So that's interesting. So let's say you had a horrible date and turned out terrible. You might even take blame for it. So how do you meditate after a date?
Yeah, it's important to meditate maybe even before a date or after a date. Either one could be really good. So afterwards, I mean, you could do it the same way that you do before. I mean, I don't know if you remember, but I wrote a book called The Book of Sacred Baths, and in it I have several couples baths, but I also have some date baths, some date rituals.
Wow.
And you can wash away your ex with Epsom salt and these beautiful essential oils that seem to change your mood. They've done some research on it. And you can meditate and say, you know, what are the limiting beliefs, right, that I'm having right now? And can I wash them down the drain, right? So it's actually a physical and emotional hygiene ritual.
In my book, on a piece of paper, and then they light it up, but that could be a fire hazard. So I think I like
that. Oh, yeah, I like that too. Well, I have a Reiki teacher named Raven who takes this bucket everywhere. It's like this steel, you know, and she'll take it to Central Park and everyone puts their wishes in, and then she burns it, and there's never a fire. So if you get something like that.
That's kind of cool. Yeah. So basically getting rid of the bad energy in a spiritual way is good. You also mentioned things like, what did I learn on the date? Being non-judgmental, and also having gratitude. So gratitude is a great emotion. We know this in positive psychology, and I wrote the book, The Three Secrets of Happiness. We talk about gratitude. It's basically the idea that the good that comes to you comes from outside you. And we have this great appreciation for that. So how can you be grateful for a lousy date, though? Let's say they're cheap or something happened bad.
Yeah. Well, that's funny, because I remember I was coming up with article topics for my very first book, you know, the one Dating from the Inside Out. And one of the articles, I haven't read it in a long time, was something like, now I'm going to forget the title, but it was a good title. It was basically like, how do you benefit from a lousy date? Basically what you're saying.
Oh, okay.
And I came up with like 10 or 12 ways. Uh-huh. And the reason is that I really do see still dating as a transformative journey. So it's not just finding your spouse. It's like, what do you learn along the way about yourself to better prepare you to attract that back?
Right.
So, so if you do have a lousy date, and you're able to use mindfulness, you can say like, what did I learn from that? Because what you don't want helps you get more clear about number one, what you do want. And I see that all the time. So you can go through those people much more quickly. If you continue to pick narcissists over and over again, you can catch it really quickly and then find somebody who's going to be there for you and that kind of thing. So that's one huge way, but also just to see your triggers, because people are mirrors for us. So, you know, if somebody's triggering you because they're a different religion or because, you know, they're the wrong height or whatever it is, doesn't mean you have to change that, but you can then look at it and say, is that something I want to continue? And then when the next person comes along, they may be the perfect match for you and you would have rejected them before. In Judaism, they call that a temi. Like, you know, you're learning along the way and there are these people you're supposed to meet before your soulmate to help you get ready.
Ah, interesting. And I also talk about trusting your inner wisdom. Now, I use the word hara, which is a martial arts term, you know, the 2 inches below your navel, the center of power, intuition. Where a lot of people don't do that. They don't really trust their hara, their intuition, or their gut for dating or relationships. Why do you think that is? Why do people ignore their gut and they just make maybe wrong choices?
Well, that's a really good question. I think a lot of people, number one, ignore their gut because they're so in their head. And I had this as well. I don't know about you, but like when you've been in academia or you're in business or things like that, you're taught so much to always do something logical,
right,
and it may compete with something that's more intuitive or even from your higher self. And so I had to kind of unlearn that. Yeah. And also when you're in the fight or flight mode and you're sort of more in action, you don't slow down enough to always hear that guidance. So I think it requires you to tune into your body and to that part of yourself, which mindfulness can help.
Okay, that's kind of cool. But you live in—is it New York City, or you live in some place, or is it a rural area? I forgot where you told me.
So I live in, it's sort of New York City proper, but I live near the beach, so I'm actually like 45 minutes to an hour outside on the subway.
So you can get into your relaxed hara, your intuition out there, right, in the beautiful place.
Well, today is actually like the Jewish holiday, the New Year, and it's nice that I'm talking to you because you're so spiritual, so I feel like that's part of it, but I did take a walk and I did my ritual by the beach, so I'm lucky to have that option.
Yeah, definitely. Now, Paulette, the interesting thing about here is you're writing a book, or actually you published a book, it's called Facebook Dating. And Facebook, as we know, has 2 billion people daily. I think you said it's 80%, almost 80% college graduates, 200 million singles. And they have a new dating application or a new approach to dating on Facebook. And you said they match people up based on mutual interests, friends or friends. There are Facebook events. Also, if you break up with someone, there's a way to eliminate or cut down on their feeds or something like that.
Yes.
So a lot of stuff going on. So tell us about this. What is this whole Facebook dating thing?
So Facebook, as you know, many people are on it anyway, and they're very familiar with it. So the first thing is there's like less of a barrier to even get on it, especially if you're older or things like that, because you're already familiar with it.
Yes.
And plus you don't have the stigma of like having to pay because you're already on it anyway.
Yes.
There is, some negatives to people's association right now to Facebook. If you look it up, there's tons of negative articles about Facebook dating because of the privacy issues. So there's that barrier in terms of worrying about information. But because of all the things that they've gone through, I feel like they have tried to learn for whatever reason, from those mistakes, and also polled and surveyed a ton of singles to see what wasn't working on other apps, like with privacy, with meaningful relationships and all these kind of things, and with matching. So they tried to build it from the ground up based on that information to be different from other apps. Now, whether that actually in practice bears fruit and ends up to be true, we'll see. But what I had read about it really appealed to me as a dating coach because of some of the frustrations that I hear constantly. And so some of the things that are really helpful is like, some simple things too, like instead of scrolling through pictures, you have to actually scroll down and read what people wrote.
Yes.
Now, whether people are actually going to write meaningful things is a different thing, because that remains to be seen. But I like that idea. And also that you couldn't send like nudie pictures or anything inappropriate because it was text only. They did that on purpose. You could immediately say someone was harassing you. And so there are rules of like the community, and people already have a sense of community. And then there are so many options for you to unlock You can decide to stay very private and to not have friends of friends and not have family or anybody see that you're on there. Or you can go through successive choices, which is the conscious piece, right, about how much to reveal. And I could give you several examples of that, but I really like the idea that you could first just start messaging, and then you could go to a group. Let's say you're interested in being vegan or mindfulness, for example, and you can see who's single there, either to talk to them about a shared interest, which is a deeper soul level, or even live. So it's kind of like a joining of old school dating ideas, meeting friends of friends as an option, meeting live, but then with a modern tech approach. And that really appealed to me because I don't know how it is there, but like here in New York, you would think you would have every option available, but so many of the reports of the things that people do live here are just negative and very expensive. So it's frustrating. There aren't, in the end, there are many things to try, but many people come back to the dating apps. So this was nice.
Now, Facebook, one thing I like, people can even play my book, Love Types, which talks about, you know, Myers-Briggs compatibility, is that you can ask personal, I think it says 20 personal questions.
Yes.
Also, by knowing how people post, you can maybe determine the personality. I think you said that extroverts usually post about activities. Introverts may post more about intellectual topics. And then we have the security seekers, the sensing judges that post a lot about kids, you know, their family. And other people post about their achievements. And you said exercise. So that could be the knowledge seekers or people that are into power or success. So that's interesting that you could actually start to determine people's personality types, their love types, kind of like by how they respond to your questions and by their posts.
I love that idea. And one thing that they don't do automatically, I don't know if you're talking about, but it's an option, is to then, you know, unlock your mutual Facebook profiles. And I remember I was having a conversation when I was writing this book with my dad, and I was like, well, I don't know. People are so private. I don't know if they'd want to do that. And he said, oh, nonsense. Well, I mean, he does this for a living where he interviews people. And he's like, why wouldn't you want all the information at your disposal? You can't get that anywhere else. So I don't know if people would respond that way. But if they do, you can tell so much, and you could really tell a lot about what you're saying based on what they like, what they share. So it's really nice to have that option, even maybe before you meet in person. So and see their friends and family. Yeah. So
definitely,
I think it's a huge advantage.
Yeah. And also the idea that we talked about before with the love types or guy types, that there are certain kind of groups or organizations that cater to each personality. The meaning seekers love psychology, philosophy. The knowledge seekers love computers, technology, and science. And it looks like they have what we call Facebook events here, where you can know which singles are attending the events. And if you like someone attractive, you can click to see if they're single. So that could be interesting to kind of go to like-minded groups that meet your personality type.
Yes, and that's missing so much in other apps. It's all about looks and, you know, and kind of chatting people up. And I think that to take it to a deeper level before you kind of choose or meet in person is really helpful. And also some people do better in person than trying to come up with topics online.
Yeah, and so you could even features here that are interesting. You see, you can create a whole relationship history of how you met, like, you know, a little scrapbook. You were friends first. Is that the way it works?
I tried it out because, you know, I can't remember if I was probably posting with my husband when we were dating, but you can type in that algorithm that I put in the book, and then it shows like every single post from my husband from when we were dating to like married, and then, you know, with our kids. So that's really a cute feature. I hope they keep it. Yeah. So they know everything about you, but also you can kind of see it too.
Exactly. Now, the other thing is something called a reputation score. Now, I wasn't quite clear what this meant. It says if you circulate fake news, what do you mean by circulate fake news?
Well, you know, there's a whole thing before, and this is separate from Facebook dating per se, but that, you know, there was a lot of news posts going on, and people were saying, I don't know if it was because it was paid that it would come into your feed. And then with everything that's happened with Facebook before, they've had to be more careful about that. I don't know what their exact algorithm or what they're doing now, but it seems like a lot of things have changed since they've gotten in trouble.
So is that like posting an ad, like, I want to sell sneakers on your site or something? Is that what you call a fake ad?
Well, that's not what I meant. No, I don't know if that's a fake ad too, but it's more like fake news. You know how those news feeds where people report things that weren't necessarily true or from a different angle. Yeah, that was happening a lot politically before.
Okay.
And you would start to see it and believe it. And people say, oh, no, that's fake news. So that wasn't trustworthy. Do you understand? And people were getting upset. And I don't know whether it was because they paid to be in the feed or how that works. Okay. Because I'm not
sure
aware.
But is a prospective date's reputation based on their fake news, or is it based on their being an honest person or a nice person? Do you know how they do that, the repetition score?
I don't know their secret sauce in terms of either their matching algorithm or that, but I do know that I read somewhere that they may be assigning a trustworthy score. And I would imagine that part of that, of course, will be whether people are reporting that they're harassing them or different things like that, because they have the ability and they have a data science team, as I wrote about. So I think that in that way, it'll be much more, I would imagine, more robust than other sites.
I see. Now, the other thing is, you know, I work a lot with introvert or shy people. I wrote a book, The Gift of Shyness, and the idea is hard for people to really admit that they like someone. So the secret crush looks like it's an idea. How does that work? Let's say you really have a crush on someone.
I know. I think it's really funny. It's like a high school thing, right? I mean, instead of just kind of stepping up and telling someone you like them. But at the same time, I think it probably will appeal not only to shy people, but just to anybody who like is very afraid of hearing no or saving face, you know, or has low self-esteem or anything like that.
Right.
Because basically you can take nine people, and I don't even think they have to be your really good friends, but just people that you've had a crush on. And in real life, if you told a friend and then a friend, you would still, maybe you would know they know, even if it didn't come back to you directly, right?
Yes.
But here, you can list them on a list, and if they don't have a secret crush list at all, they'll never. And if they do and you're not on it, they'll never know. So there's really no risk, but if you're on theirs, then there's a match. So it's a little goofy, but it's a very safe way to kind of put out a feeler.
Yeah. Kind of cool. And they also have what's called a bucket list, where you can say stuff you want to do in the future, like travel, like compare future goals. How does that work?
Yeah, I think that was actually something I was writing about. That's part of, I kind of combined some things that are on the regular Facebook profile, like lists and bucket lists, that if and when you decide the option of both mutually unlocking your Facebook profiles, these are things that you could learn that you wouldn't learn otherwise on another app, right?
Yeah.
So you can kind of see what are the things that they most hope to do in their life, or what are the things that they're doing right now. And I think that that's like a really 3D experience compared to what you would see otherwise.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now let's talk about a couple of caveats. Now, you did mention privacy. And what if someone says, you know, this sounds like a Big Brother society where the data science team, they're observing my browsing habits, they're, you know, putting me into computers. So what if I don't want to,
I'm a private
person.
Anyway.
So what do I do about this thing?
I know. That's a really good question. And to be quite honest, I'm not an expert in that. I had a guy named Lawrence Dodds, I think, from The Telegraph. He's a tech reporter, asking me some of these detailed questions. And I said, that's really more of a question for you guys, because I'm coming at this from a more long-term, you know, dating coach perspective, and how it'll be helpful. But having said that, there are definitely going to be a lot of recommendations for privacy in general with Facebook. And I think that's going to be changing like every moment and every week. I already noticed something myself. I don't even know how to do ads, but I, when my book came out, because I wasn't even expecting it to come out, they just said on a Thursday, oh, it's out. And I expected it like in December. So I just pressed, you know, on Amazon, it's out. Anyway, so I was trying to post an ad, and all of a sudden I couldn't place an ad. Maybe this is too much information, but you know, you couldn't pick females at this age, but it's so changed. And I mean, maybe I didn't see it in increments because I don't do this stuff regularly, but it was a big change. So I think it's going to be constantly changing what they're allowed to do now and the privacy. They have to, if they want people to trust them, and they know this even from a marketing perspective, they're going to have to be a lot more careful. However, having said that, I was on another show and the guy said, well, you know, just be careful. Don't say anything online that you wouldn't want to be out there. And when you think about it, a lot of times on average, people just exchange messages like three times, then they meet up, right?
Yes.
So it's not like, I don't know, you're exchanging your whole life story. But the problem really is beyond that, because people are going on here 35 minutes a day anyway and writing everything and sharing everything. So it's become, again, a habit and unconscious.
Right.
So it is very probable that people are going to stay on there and share just because it's convenient and they're doing it already.
Makes sense.
So
the other issue could be, what if someone says, hey, I'm a little old school. This sounds kind of mechanical to me, having to put all this information and this stuff. Why don't we just, you know, go to the church picnic or something, or, you know, go meet someone in the usual place.
That's probably what the priests are saying, right? Well, I mean, I personally am very spiritual, so I would love to meet somebody maybe in synagogue, but in actuality, and maybe this is me, I don't go regularly. I'm sure there are a lot of people who do go regularly who do meet people that way.
Now, wait a minute, Paul, are you married or single?
Oh, yeah, I'm married. I have two kids,
Oh, okay. So,
but I'm just saying, and I didn't meet my husband that way. I met him at work. He's a therapist.
You're going to make him jealous if you say that.
No. I'm just saying hypothetically. Well, actually, it's funny because I may have, no, it's funny because I am married, and so I probably can't make my own profile on Facebook dating, which I'd like to do. I might do that and just say I'm an author. That's a question. Anyway, but what I was going to say, what I'm suggesting is that You know, I don't know the percentage of people, young people, let's say, who are looking for somebody that go regularly to church. If they do, I think it's a great idea.
Sure.
I think some synagogues and churches do have groups for singles. I know they used to.
Exactly.
And there are also sites that are more spiritual, religious in nature, where maybe people might be more spiritual and serious minded, you know, so that there's an online version of that too. So I think all of that is a great idea. I just know that in actuality, when I suggest it to people, I don't get too many bites. I don't know about you, but because people may not want to do
that. Are too a little lazy, or they have no time. Why do they want to meet so quickly and easily through the computer?
I do think that people are a lot lazier. I wrote an article a long time ago called "Dating in a Seinfeld Generation."
Yes.
And nobody really wants any meeting. You know, they just want whatever's easy. It's fast food dating. So I do find that to be the case. Plus, we've trained people to that because, you know, even with my kids, they say, "Oh, you had 1 hour of TV and 1 hour of television. You're happy for it now." Well, this is not going to fly now. Like, you have to prepare them, you know, to have to be able to use all of this.
Exactly.
So. So, you know, it's a combination of everybody using technology, the laziness and the busyness and all that.
Exactly.
And it's also inexpensive.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I think there are great advantages. Technology obviously has changed the world in many ways, in good ways. But also there's some challenges. But Paulette, what I like about your book and in general, that you really integrate a lot of things. You integrate a spiritual approach, psychological, and, you know, modern practicality, you know, the technology of today. And on the spiritual side, psychological side, you talk about inner blocks that people have to find someone, to find a soulmate. And you mentioned one of the biggest ones is the fear of rejection or even rejecting people. And your solution is loving kindness meditation, which is actually a very fascinating thing where you extend love to others. How does that work? Let's say you're feeling rejected right now on a you know, someone you really liked on the platform. And then what do you do? How do you do loving kindness meditation?
Well, a loving kindness, sometimes they call it a meta meditation, is to change the focus from, oh, woe is me, what's wrong with me, or I'm angry at the other person, to extending that we're all one, and to imagining that person, and then just practicing sending yourself love, first of all, so that you, because if you're wounded and hurt, right, you need to fill up with that love so that you feel better and then can extend it. And then also imagining that person and wishing them loving kindness. And you don't have to actually talk to them to do that. It can be an easy thing that you do in quiet and no one has to know.
Yeah,
so
makes sense. And you also talk about, we talk about this in Love University, loving yourself, others, and a higher nature, but you talk about self-love, not in an egotistical way, but in a self-compassionate way. And you talk about writing things that you're good at, cheerleading your highest good, and even a dating mantra saying, I am lovable. Why is that important to have self-love first before you go out in the dating world?
Because I think people can sense that, even though the words you're saying come out a certain way, or you may brag or something, you can tell when someone's kind of insecure by even their body language and some of the things that they say. And obviously, one of the most attractive traits that I found when I interviewed men and things at workshops that I've given is that they want somebody confident and radiant, they said, and somebody who loves themselves and who loves them. So they can have a really beautiful model, but if they can tell she's insecure or hates men, then they can tell that's going to be really icky to be around and that it's not as attractive over time.
Yeah, because you talk about the law of attraction, I think, in energy sense and the attractor field. You say people that have like negative expectations, like, you know, men are jerks or women are this, or I'm not very attractive myself, I'm not good looking, that they often don't really attract good people, right? They get into problems versus if they have a more positive mindset, they do attract more. Do you see that a lot in your clients?
Absolutely. And sometimes it's not even about, you know, the actions of what they wear and where they go and how often they're going out. Sometimes it can be that, but more often it's getting them ready inside and then they can take the same action and get totally different results if they're aligned with what they want, you know, because other people aren't going to really buy it if you don't.
Exactly. Now, you talk about the lower and the higher self, and I talk about invincible mind and self-defeating mind. But it's similar because you're saying that we have to generate positivity within ourselves first, you know, our own love, our own self-belief, and then that transmits outwardly and attracts people to us. Now, one thing that is also interesting is you talk about other people's blocks to love or other people's responses in the dating world, and you have like a lot of code here. I guess maybe you could help me with the terminology because there's a lot of these new terms. Now, ghosting I've heard about. I know that means someone disappears after they dating you or something. But then you have something called benching. What does benching mean?
Isn't it like athletics, right?
Yeah.
Where they string you along and they say that you'll do something and then they don't ever do it. So you're kind of like put on the bench, right? You're like, in case I need you, then I'll pull you out when you're convenient, right?
So why is that? Is it because are they just too shy, or they just want some attention? They don't want to get involved with you and waste time? What is their motivation?
I think it's that they're very selfish, right? It's that they maybe something is more shiny and interesting, a star player over there, and you're just somebody that, oh, if I need someone or they get hurt or they're not available and I need someone on my arm, then you come. You're like third string.
String? Wow. Sports analogies now. We're getting into baseball.
Well, I know nothing about sports, literally nothing, except for gymnastics maybe.
They'd be like somersaulting away from you, right? They're somersault away from you. Now, the other thing, submarining. They suddenly vanish and reappear weeks later without apology or reason. What is that about?
Yeah, so it's almost like they go underground and, you know, you're used to them being there every day, and then it's like, poof, where are they? And
now,
then
by the way,
come back.
Reggie, my producer, you're nodding your head here. Have you ever heard about submarining, or have you had that experience?
Well, I've heard of ghosting, but I like submarining. That's how it's called. That
makes sense?
Yeah.
I see. Yeah, Reggie's a young man in the dating world. He has a lot of success, so I think he's encountered some of these things.
Oh, absolutely.
How about the idea of fubbing, where you pay more attention to your phone than your date? How does that work?
Yeah, that seems to happen with both these days, unfortunately. I don't know who's raised these people. I guess it becomes habitual. And sometimes they'll say it's work-related, right? If it's like a workaholic or something.
Okay.
And, you know, or God forbid it's that they're getting other dates and responding to them while they're on a date. You know, I guess that happens too. But sometimes it's just people don't even realize they're doing it. And it is pretty rude. And it is something to, I think, become more conscious of.
Right.
To just put your phone away.
So what do you do, Paulette, if you encounter, fubbers, benchers, ghosters, and all these other weird people, do you just eliminate them off your list? Or what do you do if you encounter this? Or try to talk to them and find out what's going on?
Well, I like what you said better. I thought you were going to say, so how long do you just stop dating? That's what I thought you were going to say. Because in the research, after a month, a lot of people just drop off. So I think the thing is, again, not to reject yourself in the process and to realize that you just don't have to tolerate a lot of that behavior. Now, of course, sometimes it may take you a moment or, you know, a quick minute to discern whether somebody's just late or something, their mom was sick or whatever. But if you see a pattern, then you could just, that's why I wrote about it, is you can become conscious of it, not blame yourself, and then just move on.
The other thing,
and say,
though,
that's not what I want.
Paulette, is you mentioned you're limited to 100 dates a day or certain connections. That sounds like a lot of people. Isn't that kind of overwhelming? Like, you have so many choices and you can get really very picky and impatient and delete everybody. So how do you deal with that problem? Like, you're overly stimulated by all these options and then you just kind of like randomly eliminate people.
Well, one reason that I like the mindfulness, whether it's dating or anything else in life, is we're all completely overstimulated. I'm sure if there's some way to detect that, right? It's just, it exhausts our energy. It probably causes all kinds of irritability and problems. Yes. And so that inner pause thing, even 5 minutes before a date, or even if you go to the bathroom and do some deep breathing, it helps you to reset and re-energize and to refocus and to really be present. And so that's one way. But I also mentioned that there are apps that, it's kind of crazy, but more technology that helps you to prioritize dates. And I also just personally tell my clients, I was joking with one yesterday and saying, you know, okay, well, you know, if you gave the narcissist a chance, you need to give this guy, I don't care if he's an inch star, you need to give him three dates.
Give the antisocial
a
break
a
or something, right?
Dates. I say give three dates. And in this case, you know, a few messages, because people are nervous, they're not their best self. Situations do happen. Okay. And then, you know, obviously if there are red flags, you eliminate them. So you're not just going again on impulse.
Right.
Or
so Paulette, I think the ultimate thing, and here's where you kind of end with the book, is talking about connecting with the soul and not the ego. So the idea of a true soul connection, you said souls value freedom. Souls see unity as one. And also they are accepting, almost like unconditional love or agape. So those are whole different concepts or ideas. So tell us about that. How does the soul and the soulmate work?
So we usually think of a soulmate as somebody who makes us happy. We may have touched on this before, you and I, but, you know, makes us happy, completes us. We hear the angels singing. We have the best sex ever. They think we walk on water. And that only lasts, I don't know, in your experience, but usually like at most 2 or 3 years. And then a real soulmate is somebody who gets down in the dirt with us and helps us to look at the difference of like what we need to complete, what we need to work on to perfect our souls, and also our soul missions, and then also brings out our potential. So it's both. And it also can be like a very difficult relationship because they're mirroring things that we don't want to see. And I'm talking more about marriage, but also in dating as well. They trigger us. So
yes,
part of what I talk about to try to like educate people a little bit about this is just because you're not happy right now, or you're being triggered, or this relationship is seems to be work, doesn't mean it's not a relationship that's really transformative or really going to serve you long term. It might be the opposite.
Yeah, exactly. At Love University, we'd like to talk about creating light in the world. You know, two people get together to create light, which is positive energy, love, and even a legacy beyond their relationship on Earth. Now, Paulette, it's been a wonderful, as usual, having you on the show. I really appreciate you coming on and bringing us all this great wisdom and knowledge. And also, kind of in a spiritual way and a practical way, where can people learn more about you? Do you have any books, tapes, coaching that you do?
Sure. My website is drpaulettesherman.com. And all my books are on Amazon. And this latest one is Facebook Dating from First Date to Soulmate. I also have some classes on Udemy, and you can just type in Udemy, Paulette Sherman.
Yeah. It's been a wonderful pleasure again. Thanks for being on board.
Yeah.
So Love University students, if you want to reach us, you can reach us at loveuniversity.love. Call us at 310-226-8090. You can write to us at loveuniversitylove@gmail.com. You can follow us on Facebook at Love University Podcast. Like us on Instagram and Twitter at Love Letter U Podcast. And again, if you have any questions, you'd like to be on the show, also if you're interested in Facebook dating, this is a great opportunity to really meet people in a different way based on compatibility. So we're going to see if we can integrate love types into this as well. And we'd love to have you on, Paulette, again to the show.
And, thank you so much.
Do more things with you. So until next time, Dr. Alex Avila, this is Love University. Put away your notebooks, your iPads, your phones, and class is now dismissed.